providential power. Balaam is actual power. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When the Brahmanas came to understand that the king, inspired by the supreme controller, had drunk the water, they all exclaimed, "Alas, the power of providence is real power. No one can counteract the power of the supreme." In this way, they offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Omagyana tirandasya jananjana salakaya chakshanri tamyena tasmai shri guruve namaha. So here we see the king having given up his kingdom and gone to the forest, still had this desire of having children. And these brahmanas in the forest understood this. So out of kindness, they're doing this yajna and sanctifying this water so that the king's wife may have a son. But by providence, which is an interesting word, because I was looking around how it's used in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's used in so many ways. Sometimes it seems like it's talking about karma. Sometimes it seems like it's talking about Krishna personally taking charge. And so I looked it up in the dictionary. And this is a British dictionary. And it said, providence is God's foreseeing protection and care of his creatures. And it made me realize how Srila Prabhupada, because the English language is so large, now we use such a small amount of it, but he knew exactly which word to put in for the case that it's trying to make. And this word providence is Krishna. So there's other parts in the Bhagavatam, and in fact, throughout the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata and all Vedic literatures, it's stories of Krishna taking charge. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it would not have been spoken unless Krishna put Maharaj Parikshit into a situation in which he was out in the forest hunting, and he became so thirsty and tired, and he was looking around for somewhere to get a drink. And when he saw this rishi ashram, he thought, "Oh, I will go there and get a drink." But upon approaching the rishi, who was in deep meditation, and asking for water, there was no reaction. And Maharaj Parikshit, why would he become angry at such a thing? But due to providence, it's explained, which is Krishna's arrangement, he became angry and put a snake, a dead snake, around the rishi's neck. So then we know that Sringi came along, and becoming angry at seeing his father insulted in such a way, he cursed the king to die in 7 days. So all of this happened by providence. There was no reason why a king of his stature would become angry at someone ignoring him. And then Sringi becoming so angry, such a young boy, and cursing the king like that. So I was also thinking that in the Mahabharata, there's so many cases when it's so obvious how Krishna steps in. And one of the famous cases was when Duryodhana was getting so angry during the battle, and he couldn't understand why Bhishma could not kill the Pandavas. I mean, he was so much more powerful than any of the Pandavas. Why couldn't he just go in and finish it all? He just had to even kill one of them. And every day he was complaining and making Bhishma feel so upset. And Bhishma was trying to explain to him, you know, this Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's just not an ordinary person. And these Pandavas also are not just ordinary fighters, soldiers. I've killed thousands and thousands of their soldiers. But they're not ordinary persons. And not only that, but Krishna, his charioteer is Krishna. I mean, Arjuna's charioteer is Krishna. And he is protecting these Pandavas. So there's no way, there's no possibility. So Duryodhana kept on going. And finally, Bhishma said, "Okay, I'm going to put all my ascetic powers into 5 arrows. And these 5 arrows will, without a doubt, kill these Pandavas." so he sat in meditation, putting all of his punya into these arrows. And then he said, okay, I will keep these arrows, and tomorrow I'm going to use these arrows if nothing happens in between. So Duryodhana thought, I don't know if I trust this. Something might happen if I leave them with Bhishma. So he said, my dear grandfather, I'll take them home with me. And I will keep them very safely next to my bed. So Bhishma said, okay, you can do that. And inside, Bhishma Dev was smiling because he knows Krishna. And he knew that Krishna could do anything. And he's definitely going to protect his devotees. So that night, Krishna went up to Arjuna and said, Arjuna, I would like you to go to Duryodhana's tent and ask him for 5 arrows. Remember, he owes you a favor. Because when you protected him from that Gandharva and released him, he offered you a boon, and you said, I'll take it later. So I want you to use that boon now. So Arjuna, being the devotee and servant of Krishna, immediately went. He left and went over to the tent of Duryodhana. So in those days, people were so chivalrous that there was no enmity after the battle. So it wasn't unusual for someone to go to either camp. So Arjuna entered Duryodhana's tent, and he reminded Duryodhana, you know, you did offer me a boon at one point, and when I saved you from that Gandharva, do you remember? And Duryodhana, feeling a bit remembering such an incident of how he was saved by his enemy, said, yes, I remember that. He said, well, I would like to get that boon now. I know you have 5 arrows, and I'd like to get those arrows now. And Duryodhana couldn't believe, how could he understand that I have these arrows? It must have been Krishna. It must have been that supreme person giving him that knowledge. So of course he gave the arrows, and the Pandavas remained living. Even once when they were in battle, this was after Bhishma had already been fallen and Drona was in charge. He wanted to make, because the same, Duryodhana kept going on at him, why aren't you killing the Pandavas? I'm sure you can do it. You know, there's no reason why they can't just be killed. If we could even just kill Yudhisthira, that would be the end. Everybody would stop. His brothers wouldn't keep fighting. No one would keep fighting. So Drona tried to explain to him, there is no possibility of killing these Pandavas. Say, no, I think you're just partial to them. Arjuna was your favorite student, so therefore... And he kept going on and on. And he said, okay, there's one thing I can do. I can make this chakra vyuha, this formation of our armies in a chakra. And no one knows how to get into that except Arjuna. And he might have taught someone else, but he's the one who knows how to enter it. I taught him. So if you can arrange that he's somewhere else on the battlefield, we can get one of his main people, maybe even Yudhisthira, in here, and we can kill him without doubt. So they thought, oh, this is a good idea. Let's do that. We can definitely. So I forget which army came and asked Arjuna to fight with them. And of course, the Kshatriya can't refuse. So he went off to another side of the battlefield to fight. And meanwhile, Drona had made this beautiful chakra vyuha. And they were thinking, how can we get into this? None of us know how to break this. And they're killing our soldiers like anything. And finally, someone said to Yudhisthira, I think Abhimanyu might know how to do this, because I think Arjuna has taught him. So Yudhisthira asked Abhimanyu, he said, well, I know how to get into it, because my father's taught me how to enter it. But I don't know how to get back out of it. So if I'm trapped in there, I'll surely die. So Bhima was saying, oh, don't worry. We'll be right behind you, and we'll go in right after you. They'll have no time to shut it, because we'll be right with you. So in this way, he said, okay, for my uncles and my father and for Krishna, I'm going to do this. So he was only 16 years old at the time, and he went right towards Drona. And they were thinking, this young boy coming towards us. And Drona had the suspicion, maybe he knows how to enter this vyuha. Maybe Arjuna's taught him this. So immediately he entered, and he went right in. And it said he was just killing thousands of warriors as he was entering and causing chaos. But Jayadrath, who had had this special boon from Lord Shiva, that he couldn't kill the Pandavas, but he would be allowed to stand up to them just for one day. So he got in front, and everybody knew this boon except for the Pandavas, and he got in front, and he was stopping them. And they were thinking, how can Jayadrath be stopping us from entering this vyuha? And they were fighting like anything, because they knew Abhimanyu had already gone in and was already fighting. So they were fighting like anything, and still they couldn't defeat Jayadrath, and they were kept out. And we know how Abhimanyu fought like anything, killing so many. And finally it took seven of their Maharatis to stop him and to kill him, which was unheard of, to have a young boy fighting and have seven Maharatis defeat him was really sinful. So when Arjuna came back and found out that his son was dead, he took this oath that he would kill Jayadrath before the sun set the next day. And if he didn't, he would enter the fire and die. And Krishna was saying, of course, the other side knew immediately what was happening. So they started planning how they were going to keep Jayadrath away from Arjuna. And it only had to be for one day, and then Arjuna would be dead, and that would be the end of the battle. So they were making all these plans, and Krishna was saying, why did you take such a rash oath like that? Do you want to give victory to the other side? And Arjuna said, with you, I know we can do this. So, of course, Drona set it up so that there was vyuha after vyuha, and Jayadrath was right at the very back. Jayadrath, knowing that he only had one day to stand up to the Pandavas, wanted to take off. He just wanted to go hide somewhere. He knew his fate was sealed now. But Drona was convincing him, no, we can do this. There's no problem. All we have to do is keep him away from you just for these few hours, and then it's all over. So Jayadrath was centered in the middle of a formation, and I think there was about four other formations in front. And this was like, no way was Arjuna going to get there before sunset. So the day started, and Arjuna and Krishna started, and they were going and going and killing so many, and they penetrated through. And by midday, they were on the around the end of the second vyuha, and the horses were so tired, and they'd been shot. And an amazing thing Krishna did, he built like a fort, and he had Krishna get Arjuna get off the chariot and fight. And he shot arrows into the ground, bringing up water, and he let the horses drink, and he soothed all of their wounds, and they were all ready to go again. So then he hooked them back up, Arjuna got it back on the chariot, and they kept going. So they got through the third, they were on the fourth, the sun was going down rapidly, and we all know when the sun's coming up or going down, it's so quick when it reaches a certain point. So it was getting to that point, and Arjuna was fighting like mad, and they were going. He said, Krishna, I don't think we're going to make it. And Jayadrath was so happy. He saw them way up there. He thought, oh, I'm saved. And all the crews were actually starting to celebrate. They thought, oh, we've done this. And the sun was going down, and suddenly there was no more sun. And they were all celebrating. We've done it. Now Arjuna's going to enter fire. And suddenly the sun came out again. And Krishna said, Arjuna, shoot him now. And he shot Jayadrath, and that was the end. Now, this was definitely Krishna's arrangement, because everyone saw the sunset, but then the sun was up again. So in this way, Krishna protects his devotees. And even in our own lives, sometimes we can see how Krishna makes some special arrangement that shouldn't have happened. Somehow or other, it shouldn't have been possible. And I know for me, I can remember one time I was supposed to be going out on Sankirtan. It was a Saturday at the manor, and everyone would go out on Sankirtan. And there was always enough room, and everyone that they could get out would go out. So I'd made arrangements for babysitters and everything, and I had my books and my bag, and I went out to the car, and they said, no room for women, there's no room. I said, what do you mean there's no room? They said, no, all the seats are taken. So I went around, there was no place to get in. And I thought, this is so weird. Normally they're begging you to get in this car, they'll squish you in somehow or other, and today they're telling me I can't go. So then I thought, okay, this must be somehow Krishna's arrangement, and I went home. And then I heard later that the car had had a big accident, and that everyone that was in the car had gone to the hospital. And I was thinking, although, why should it be me? But somehow Krishna had made the arrangement that I hadn't gone in that car. And that happened to me twice more, you know, that things like, and you'd think, why? But Krishna takes a hand in all these things. And I was thinking on the, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Yatvamam Shantamruchati. That Prabhupada called this the peace formula, that a person in full consciousness, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all the planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, obtains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So just like these brahmanas, when they woke up and saw that someone had drunk the water, and then they found out it was the king, they immediately said, this is the arrangement of Krishna. This is the supreme. No one can defeat this power. So similarly, it's explained there by Krishna himself that it's because he's the supreme controller. He controls everything. Not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. So if we can understand that Krishna is controlling everything, and not only that, but that he is the dearmost friend of all living entities. He cares about every living entity, and more so for his devotees, which we see in the Mahabharata, throughout the Bhagavatam, that his devotees, although he says he is equal to everyone, that's one point in the Bhagavatam that the sages discussed, was that how did Putana, who had come to kill Krishna, and Krishna is supposed to be equal to everyone, but he was so merciful to this demon who came to kill him that he gave him liberation the same as his mother. That's such an amazing thing. And we see throughout the Bhagavatam that Krishna, even sometimes someone appears to be a demon or coming to do harm, somehow or other, Krishna gives them mercy. But we see special care is taken for the devotee of the Lord. So many cases, Arjuna was in trouble, just like that time with Jayadratha, and somehow or other, Krishna protected him. Even once when Bhishma was coming at him with arrows, going to kill Arjuna, Krishna jumped off his chariot, even though he said he would not take up any weapon. He took up a wheel and went after Bhishma. So even he'd break his promise for his devotee. So here the brahmanas are saying, this is a fact. And the reason is because Krishna is the dearmost friend of all living entities, and especially the devotee. He takes special care of the devotee. So even with ourselves, Krishna is always stepping in to somehow or other help us in our Krishna consciousness. And it might appear sometimes that we can't understand. It seems such a bad thing that's happening to us. I know in my life, so many things have happened that seem so bad that I can't understand why Krishna would have this happen. Why is this happening? What, you know, but later on, you can see, that was Krishna's arrangement. Somehow or other, and it seems to me that even the worst things that happen actually are the best things for us. Because when we're in pleasurable situations, a lot of times we start thinking we're the controller again, and that, you know, everything's going good, and we're the enjoyer, and we're the controller. And then something happens that's beyond our control, and suddenly it humbles us to a point of realizing Krishna is the supreme controller, and I have to surrender to him. And he does that to us over and over until we finally catch on. Ah, Krishna's the supreme controller. He's my master. Let me just surrender unto him. I think every single devotee in this room has had different occasions in their life when Krishna has shown this side of himself, of the supreme controller. And it comes as a relief, actually, of the burden of thinking that we're the controller or that we're the enjoyer. Then we can hand things over to Krishna and feel like he's our friend. Prabhupada once gave the example that once he was on a train with his father, and his father, the ticket conductor, came up and was asking for tickets. Then he said to Srila Prabhupada, he was a young boy, "Where's your ticket?" And Srila Prabhupada looked at him, but he said, "I had full faith that my father had the ticket, so I was not worried, even though he was saying, 'Where's your ticket?'" So he said, in the same way, we have to have that full faith that Krishna is the supreme controller and he's our dearmost friend. And that whatever happens, just like these brahmanas, okay, this water was drunk, all right, that's the supreme will of the Lord, what can be done? So similarly, with our lives, just like that, okay, Krishna has some arrangement for me. This has come along and it appears to be the worst thing that can happen. But somehow Krishna is trying to teach us something for that final test. Because all of us are facing our final test, which is death. And it might come today, it might come tomorrow, it might come next month, it might be in a few years. We might still have a whole lifetime if we're young. But every single one of us, just like Yudhisthira Maharaj said, the most amazing thing is that we're thinking we're not going to die. But we're seeing every single living entity in this material world leaving their bodies. So in the same way, we know that that's coming. And within that amount of time, we have to learn so many things and become the devotee that we should be, to be able to enter into the realm of the spiritual world, to enter into our eternal relationship with Krishna. So along the way, we're getting so many tests, and we have to be able to accept them with an open heart, knowing that this is from Krishna personally. A non-devotee, he is taken care of by the modes of material nature and his karma. And that's coming to him, and he's struggling with the material nature, and he's just getting, just like a spider web. The other day I was out picking flowers, and there was this moth that had gotten into a spider web near our flowers. And he was struggling, and the more he was struggling, the more entangled he was getting in this web, until finally the spider came and then just started putting more and more web around him, and he was finished. So in the same way, we're like that. We're in this material world struggling. And until we surrender to Krishna, we're getting more and more entangled, more and more wrapped up by the material nature. So we have to realize that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the only one who can take care of us and save us. And whatever situation he puts us in, even though it may seem to be the worst thing that could happen, and why would a friend put us in this situation? We have to realize it's for our benefit. Every single thing is for our benefit. So many, I've noticed that when bad things happen, I learn so much. And real realizations that stick with me come through really bad situations. And I remember once when my son was hit by a car, I remember going into the temple, looking at Lord Jagannath, and saying, "Why are you still smiling when a devotee is in the hospital dying?" You know, it just, I couldn't understand. And the longer I stayed in the hospital, the more realizations I got about how Krishna, he's doing this, first of all, for me to realize these children are not mine, they're his. He can take them whenever he likes. He can do whatever he likes with his devotees. And I was just here to take care for a time. I'm the caretaker. And he's also teaching me to be humble, to totally surrender to him, to take shelter at his lotus feet. Because there's no way I could do anything. And the more intense the situation got, the more I had to just surrender to Krishna. I knew there was no possibility. These doctors can't do anything. No one can do anything in this situation except for Krishna. And whether he wants this situation to become worse or better, that's totally up to him, and I have to surrender. And in those situations, you're forced. You're forced. You have no way out. Sometimes in life, you can go along in your daily, you know, and you have choices to make, and you can make bad things, avert bad things sometimes, and, you know. But there are certain times when Krishna gets you right in a corner where there's no escape, and you can't get out. And at that point, you realize, I have to surrender. And it's the same when Draupadi was being disrobed. She was calling out, and finally she had to surrender. And later on, she approached Krishna. She said, Krishna, there's one thing I want to ask you. I do not understand. When I was being disrobed and I was calling out to you, you didn't come. He said, no, I came. He said, but at first you didn't come. He said, yes, but you said, oh, Govinda, why aren't my husbands doing anything? Then you were taking care of your shelter of your husbands. I thought, okay, we'll see what they can do. She said, oh, yeah, I did do that. And she said, but then the next time I said, Govinda, and still you didn't come. He said, yes, you said, Govinda, and I was ready to come. And then you said, Bhishma, Drona, why aren't you doing anything? Don't you see what's going on here? And then he said, oh, yeah, I did do that. You're right. He said, but I did come when you just raised your hands and said, Govinda, and you had no other shelter than me. Then immediately I was there. So Draupadi said, oh, yes. And that was an instruction for us. That is when Krishna takes special care, when his devotee cannot do anything. So these bad situations we get into are actually a blessing from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they show us how to really take shelter of the Lord, which is something we need at the time of death, because that's going to be the big test. When there's nowhere else to run, where this is the end of this body, which is, the body is so dear to us because we have enjoyed in this body, we've done everything in this body, and suddenly it's going to be gone. This is the final test. And this is when we have to have, throughout our life, taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, so that at that time of death, it's very easy. We're practiced at it. What do they say? Practice makes perfect. So this practice of taking shelter of the Supreme Lord throughout our life comes in to the most benefit at that time of death, when we can just take shelter and go back to Godhead. So I'll stop there, and if there's any points or corrections or questions, we'll take those now.
So earlier you said the king went into the forest, and even then he was still hankering for a son, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like in Vedic times, if one does not have a son, he's considered almost like a eunuch, you know.
A eunuch?
Yeah, a eunuch. Because it's fundamental, it's important. The son has to do the strata. And then if he can't do it, then I think the daughter, husband, or something like that. But that's like the last resort. But so I guess even though he went into the forest, he knew that his life would be defeated if he didn't get a son. So he had to make all. In fact, maybe that's why he went, to get the blessings of the sages. So that's a little comment there.
Well, that's not said there in that. I mean, we could just speculate that he went there to get those. It in the Bhagavatam, it explains that he went there because he couldn't get a son, and then he realized, I just have to get out of here and surrender to the Lord and associate with saintly persons. But it says that the sages, knowing his mind, so they knew that it was still there, that hankering, then they decided to do that just as a special favor to him. But, I mean, we've been talking about how the son was important just to free one from the cycle that they and let them go to Pitraloka, Pitriloka. But I think in this day and age, even actually, Srila Prabhupada, we have a letter that was written to Dhananjaya and Balagopal that when Dhananjaya had his first child in Vrindavan, she was one of the first children to be born in Vrindavan in our movement. And he had written to him afterwards saying, I was thinking your wife was having a son, but she has had a daughter. Okay, you can name her Brijlata. Then he said, why are so many of my disciples having girls? He said, we want sons to push on this movement. So in this way, the boys were important. Even in these days, they're important. But Prabhupada explained how women, because in the Bhagavatam it goes on about women are less intelligent, and Prabhupada said, no, our women devotees are just as intelligent as the men. They can also preach. They take shelter of Krishna. They're devotees. So, but I think at one point they said, well, we have so many girls. Prabhupada said, that is all right. He said, maybe Krishna is sending all of these girls to attract the non-devotee men to come and join this movement. So I think boys were essential as a king to carry on their line. And they were especially, in those days, in Vedic times, they would take great care to bring a saintly person into their line, you know, so that they could carry on their line. When you go through the Bhagavatam, there's so many lines of kings, you know, and they have such auspicious, most of them, pasts. You know, this king did this sacrifice and gave in charity like this, and then the next king followed in his father's footsteps and did this and that. Even when we look through, when it's an appearance day, like today is the disappearance of Rupa Goswami, and you look back at different devotees' past generations of their families, and they were such illustrious devotees. So sons were important to carry that on, because with a daughter, the name goes, because she carries on then her husband's family's name. So the sons were considered very important to keep their family line going. But those sages were just being kind, you know, Vaishnavas. Oceans of mercy. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.